Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from Platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
So a lot of people think healing is a breakthrough moment, but sometimes healing looks like crying in your car, getting out of bed when you don't want to, or finally telling the truth about what happened to you. And most of the time, healing is a lot quieter than people expect. Over the last few episodes, we've been walking through the survival story of Candy Keffler, author of Never Far Too Gone. We've talked about losing yourself through years of survival mode, the silent pain nobody saw, the terrifying reality of starting over, and the moment she realized she wasn't too far gone to rebuild her life. And today we're going to be talking about something that most people understand, healing. Because healing doesn't usually happen in one dramatic movie moment. It's often slow, messy, quiet. Sometimes it looks like progress, and sometimes it looks like falling apart all over again. And yet somehow, through faith, safe people, reflection, and eventually writing her story, Candy began slowly finding pieces of herself again. And today's episode is about what healing looks like behind the scenes. So it's good to see you again. Thanks for being back.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be back.
Yeah, me too. This is a big episode, because most people imagine healing in a different way. They think it's a breakthrough moment and then everything changes, but that's usually not the case. Can you give us just a quick little background of your story? And then let us know the misconceptions that you thought you had about healing.
Yeah, my name's Candy Keffler. I'm a domestic violence survivor, a breast cancer survivor. I spent half my life in abusive, toxic relationships, married for 21 years to a man that was abusive physically and mentally, and then in another relationship that was mental abuse, a massive mental abuse, and then diagnosed with breast cancer at 50. I had 10 surgeries to save my life, but today I'm cancer-free. Praise God for that. But just half my life was spent in survival mode, and I had lost myself. I lost my identity, who I was, by living all of those years in fight or flight mode, survival mode every single day. And yeah, healing, I thought that, you know, once I decided, I made that choice in my head that, okay, I'm done living like this. Time to change. You know, you get these misconceptions that healing is going to just happen overnight, and it does not. It takes a long time. And a lot of the lies that you get told and you put in your head is that healing, it does not look beautiful all the time. It's messy. It's uncomfortable. It's not your norm if you've spent half of your life in survival mode, choosing a different life. And so your nervous system has to adjust to all of this. Just everything about what you've lived has to adjust. And so it takes time. It didn't start overnight or happen overnight. It took some time.
What surprised you most about the actual process?
What surprised me is that it was hard. But what surprised me about healing and finally making that decision to change, to live a different life than what I had been living for half my life, is that I was stronger than what I thought I was. I always didn't give myself credit for anything. I was depleted as a woman, had no self-worth, no self-confidence. I finally realized that, man, I am a lot stronger than I ever thought I was by taking this on and just doing the work that I had to do to get to this place in my life now. So I think that was the most surprising thing for me, is that I was so much stronger than what I gave myself credit for and what I was.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you still have moments where you question your self-worth and you have those days where you feel less than, or do you feel like all of that is behind you?
There are still days. They come far and few between now. And they did come a lot more so when I first, you know, changed, but they come, you know, not too often, but I still find myself sometimes questioning my own worth and, do I deserve this? I'm not, you know, worthy of the life I have now. But then I have to come back and tell myself, absolutely, you are. You deserve it. You spent half of your life surviving and just living in those awful situations, and I deserve it. So I just have to kind of talk myself into when those moments arise that I absolutely do deserve it. And just do that, keep doing that inner work. And it's inner work every day. It's not just, you do the work one time and, it's over. There's still triggers and there's still days that I find myself, questioning my own worth, but I just take a step back and look at where I came from and what work I did to get to where I am today.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I was just going trying to prove the point that like healing is not permanent either. Like we have good days and bad days, no matter how long you've been doing the work for. I'm curious as to the type of work that you did. And so what exactly does it mean to heal the nervous system and the body? What does that look like?
Well, it can feel uncomfortable, obviously, massively uncomfortable when your nervous system is starts adjusting because it's so used to that fight or flight mode every day, the, what's going to happen next, always being on alert for anything. So your nervous system has to kind of relax. Peace can feel unfamiliar, at times, but I just allowed myself to take a, just take it little by little, step by step, get alone with myself. I've said this a few times on this series that it helped a lot just to get alone with my own thoughts, my own self, and talk myself down from, those uncomfortable moments or when my nervous system was, adjusting to the life that I wanted to live now. And I was on that path to live that, but you still have to do that work every single day. Got alone with myself a lot, talked to myself, journaled a lot, just, said no to things that, I would jump to before. I always cared about everybody else's, comfort and what they needed and what they wanted before I ever cared about what I needed or wanted. And I started finally getting a little selfish in that, if you want to call it that, and just putting myself first, putting my own peace first, my own, if it didn't serve me peace and happiness, then I let go of those things and just started concentrating on anything and everything that made me, more peaceful and more healthy. And just, it takes work, but with your mind and doing that inner work, you can do it. And that's what's what I had to do is just a lot of stick to it.
Was it a lot of like quiet alone time?
Yeah, it really was. It was a lot of meditating, in my own thoughts. Even if it was just listening to music on my by myself, but just listening to, motivational, some podcasts that were motivational, listening just to my own thoughts, a lot of it. And that, yeah, it was alone. I mean, but it's nothing new because when I was living in survival mode for all those years, even if I was in a crowded room of people, I was still alone. And so it was kind of, going back to that, alone, but listening to my own thoughts and what they were trying to tell me, that still small voice that was telling me that, this is what you need to do. And just a lot of meditation and getting along with myself and my thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I can relate to that for sure. Being alone and being comfortable with the self, without the chaos feels foreign when you're used to being in constant chaos. But yeah, healing can look a lot different than what people think because it is a lot of alone time. It's a lot of being overstim you were so overstimulated and now you want like the peace and quiet. And I found, I don't know if you can relate to this, that the outside world was really loud to me and suddenly everything was
Right.
overstimulating and I couldn't handle being in a crowded room anymore because I was like overstimulated and irritated. So I would wear headphones when I went through my healing season and yeah, brainwash myself with all this motivational stuff on podcasts and high frequency music just to keep my nervous system calm. Yeah, I don't know if you can relate to that.
I can, because yeah, you don't want. Small talk is not something that you're really into, or being in crowds or being around people when you're healing. You want to kind of get, alone and just work it out within your own mind. And, yeah, I mean, I almost didn't go to, when I met Jason, I almost did not go that weekend to that get together because I was in my healing season and I didn't want to be around people. I didn't want small talk and, pretending that, my life is so great while looking and seeing everybody else having a good time and they're comfortable where they're at because I wasn't. I was still in my healing season. So, but thank God something inside me decided to go that weekend and everything changed.
Right. Can you remind everyone about that? Because Jason is your current partner.
Right. I met Jason. It'll actually be 3 years this weekend, Memorial Day weekend.
Oh,
And
wow.
yeah, I had a friend that I hadn't spoken to for a year. And that's another thing. When you are healing, you kind of become a loner in a way. Be kind of become detached from people that, that just don't serve what you're doing. And I hadn't talked to her for a year and she had heard that I had cancer. And so she reached out to me. She was recently divorced as well, and she had met somebody, and that somebody just so happened to be Jason's best friend. And they were all up at our cabin now because it's Jason's cabin, but they were all up having a barbecue, just hanging out for the weekend. And she invited me up to hang out. I haven't seen her for, a long time, so I almost didn't go, but I did, and thank God I did because I met Jason that day. And the conversation, as soon as I seen him and just started talking to him, I just knew that our souls met each other that day, and it was different. It wasn't, huge butterflies in my stomach or anything like that, but it was just something that told me that this is different, he's different, and we've been together ever since.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's so awesome. Because I know that healing can definitely feel lonely sometimes, but we still need connection and to put ourselves out there, right? But it's not selfish or, putting yourself first and taking that time. It's definitely what you need to do. Did you ever feel guilty for str still struggling, even after things started feeling better, or did you still feel guilty even when things started getting better?
And question myself when I was going through, that healing season and going through, I went through therapy and everything too. And I always question myself because I would find myself like in certain situations listening to certain music. Certain situations brought me back to the good place where me and my ex were. And so I felt guilty because of that. I thought, why am I remembering and getting emotional with these situations? But I realized through all of that that it wasn't always bad. The relationship that I was in, the second relationship after my marriage, I really loved him and I thought this was it. I thought this was really what I was looking for, everything I wanted and needed. And so, yeah, when it was good, it was really good. When it was bad, it was really bad. So those moments, I learned that your mind takes you back to those good times. And when you hear certain things or you smell certain things or you experience certain things, you remember those good times. And so, yeah, I felt guilty because I thought, why am I thinking about this when all the awful things that he did to me? But as far as now, I don't experience that as much. I mean, there may be, I don't experience any of the good times. I always just think of the bad, but I don't, as I've gotten through the healing, I don't see myself feeling guilty about it. It's just something that I did the best I could with what I was given at the time, and I made it out. I decided to get better and change, so I don't feel guilty anymore about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Nor should you, for sure. Maybe you could give the audience an idea of what a day in the life of like healing, quiet healing looks like. Like, what was your routine like?
It's like I said before, it's not huge breakthroughs, it's tiny little things. It's getting out of bed. I never wanted to get out. I had a hard time getting out of bed when I was going through everything. It was like, why do I need to get out of bed? It's just going to be a chaotic mess and not knowing what's coming next. And so little things like just getting out of bed, paying my bills on time again. I mean, really getting a structured, of paying my bills, something small. taking a walk, walks help so much. The therapy, all of that stuff, just little glimpses of myself that would come back. I didn't look in the mirror and not even know who I was. Putting on makeup again, getting dressed up again, little tiny things that you forget to do when you're living in survival mode, just little glimpses, little tiny things. They're not huge breakthroughs, but they were wins for me when I was going through everything I was. So.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. Did faith play a role in your healing journey at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I was always, close to God for the majority, but I backslid so far that I didn't know him anymore, but he was always there. And that's that still small voice. And I think that's a lot of it, was just listening to that still small voice. And I know it was him. He was just waiting for me to have enough of going through all of the struggles and all of the pain and trauma and everything I was going through, and just come back and, get back to right, get back to him. So he never left me. I left him. I backslid so far that, I'm the one that left him. He never left me. So it played a huge role.
Yeah. Were there moments where faith was all you feel like you had left?
Yeah, there was, because it was hard to, to talk to anybody, even if it was my family. It was hard to talk to them. And when I was in my, quiet moments and all of that by myself, that was me and God just talking, just, getting some things squared away and squared out. And so, yeah, that was a lot of times it felt like that was the only thing I had to hang on to, but it was all I needed, really, to get to where I am now and to finally break through and be able to trust people again, be able to talk to people again. So yeah, it felt like that's all I had, but in the end, that's really all I needed, is just to get right with God and just, do a lot of that soul searching and prayer and all of that.
Absolutely. What about community? How important was community or feeling emotionally safe while you were rebuilding your life?
Well, a lot of it was, I stayed at home a lot. I mean, I just stayed by myself a lot. I stayed, kind of a recluse in a way, just kind of, didn't really go to, events or anything like that. But as far as community, a lot of it was just my family and, talking to them, reaching out to them, even if it was a dinner at my parents again, being able to go and just feel okay, rather than feeling like, oh man, I'm hiding this awful thing that's going on in my life, because I was finally getting out of all of that and all of the situations that I had went through. So community, I mean, not I really wasn't big I was more of a loner than anything when I was healing. I was just trying to get better for myself, and so I kind of avoided going out in public a lot. When I did, it was mainly with family, kids, my kids, having them over for dinners again when there was no chaos that was happening in my house. So more family, it was my community and my kids. And yeah, I would say that that's more of what I reached out to and what played a big role for me.
Was there a moment where someone showed up for you in a way that deeply impacted your healing, or perhaps a mentor or something that you heard?
I think a lot of what helped me was my dad played a big role in my healing. He kind of re Jason kind of reminds me of my dad in a way, because they don't talk a lot, but when they talk, you listen. You listen to what
Right.
they have to say. And he did not yell. He did not reprimand me. He did not do any of that. He just simply sat with me and let me be. And that played a huge role in my recovery, in my healing. Sorry.
Yeah, it's no.
But he played a huge role. I listened. Like I said, he didn't scorn me or tell me how stupid I was for living this way. He just loved me through it and told me that no one's gonna change anything unless you change it. Nothing is gonna change unless you change it. You are the one that's in control of your life, and you're the only one that can do it. So I think he played a huge role in me finally deciding to get out. I mean, that and my health and just things that happened, but he played a huge role in just convincing me that, you know what, he's right. Everything he's saying is right. I've just been ignoring it for so long and not listening to the wisdom that's coming out of his mouth. And so, yeah, he played a huge role. My whole family did, but my dad just stood out above everyone else.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I could see how emotional you get even talking about it still. And I feel like we all have those people in our lives, the one person that just can reach us. And it's definitely like a feeling like no other when someone sees you and doesn't judge you for everything that you've been through.
Yeah, there's a lot of judgmental people out there and people that will look down upon you and all that stuff because of everything that, you know, how you lived. But that was never the case. And yeah, it's he played a huge role. And so.
Yeah, I was going to a class that's downtown in my city, and there was this couple, and they were on the street and they were arguing. And the man was being really aggressive to the woman. And I went into my yoga class, and the next day I saw her again, and she had been like severely beaten up. And I was like, it just broke my heart. I didn't know what to do, or I just felt like I wanted to intervene and just show her that I saw her. And so I just said hi to her and said, like, are you okay, kind of thing. But it was clear that she was still choosing that path because there was alcohol and drugs involved as well. But this is happening all the time, everywhere. And so you ended up writing a book. And at what point did you realize that you wanted to share your story publicly?
When I was going through everything and when I finally decided to make a change for myself, my mom always she just kept telling me, you really need to write a book about all this stuff that you've been through, everything, because you need to get it out there. And so I pondered on that for a while. I sat on it for a while. I did a lot of journaling, so I wrote a lot of stuff down. And I finally just, you know, by being on social media and seeing and hearing how many people, women and men, to deal with what I dealt with, what I lived, I decided to write my book, the story about my book, my life, and you know, in hopes that I can give some encouragement and inspiration to people that no matter what you're going through, you know, you can make it to the other side. You can live a fulfilling, abundant life and not have to just struggle and live in survival mode every single day. And I wrote it because I wanted to tell my story and where I came from and what I went through and how I was able to finally have a life of peace and just get to this other side of life. It's not all about just surviving, it's actually living again.
Yeah, absolutely. Was writing Never Far Too Gone ever terrifying or healing or both?
Well, it's funny because it was a healing process, reliving some of the things again, you know, so close to being, you know, writing about it. You live, you know, you kind of go back to that place. And I've tried, Jason doesn't really read, so I was reading in my book. We were reading a chapter a day, and there would be sometimes I wouldn't even be able to get through 3 or 4 pages without breaking down because it was hard. It was hard to kind of relive it as you're reading your own story. And he, you know, and he couldn't believe the things that I went through. And so, yeah, it was healing. It was kind of reliving it in a way. So that was hard. It was scary. But overall, it was a positive thing after all of the outreach I've gotten from people, all of the messages, all of the people that let me know, reassure me that, you know, after reading your book, I can get out of this situation now. I can become that strong woman that can get out. And so those are the kind of messages that really inspire me and reassures me that I wrote this book for the right reasons and for the people that are finding it, that are reading it. And yeah, so it was a healing process, a scary, it was all so many different things all at one time, but overall it was an amazing experience and I am so glad that I did it.
It's definitely going to help the right people. Like the right people will, you'll reach the right people just by even
Right.
being on the show and putting yourself out there in that way. I don't want to make this more difficult, but was there chapters or mo memories that were especially difficult to revisit for you?
I think the one, I mean, there's a few. There was a chapter dedicated to my best friend that committed suicide. She was 35, I was 34. She committed suicide. She was addicted to pill, you know, to prescription drugs. And I had went through that season of my life also and kind of went through that together in a way, but she just never recovered from it. She just never got out of the dark, dark place she was in. And that chapter was a really hard chapter for me. I know it was for my kids too. The book's dedicated to both of my kids. And so reliving what they lived with me and realizing all of the things that I subjected them to and they experienced was hard for me. It made me have to take a step back and really, you know, almost forgive myself again for everything that they had to live with me and experience with me, because they have traumas too from what they've seen and what they lived. So that was hard for me.
For sure. How did sharing your story help you reclaim your voice? Did you see yourself differently after writing your book?
Yeah, I've went to some events and book signings and stuff and get to talk to people, get to get up and, you know, really tell my story. And I find that, you know, questions get asked all the time and I'm able to answer those questions, to give advice, to give some perspective of what, you know, life can be like and you don't have to stay there. And so, yeah, it gave me confidence. It gave me, you know, that voice again. I always didn't have a voice. I always suffered in silence, so to speak. Never had a voice to be able to shout out things or to say things and tell my story. Everybody has a story, and every single one of us, no matter what it is. And there's someone on the other side waiting for you to tell that story. They are just waiting for you to tell it because it's them. They're living it. You're a mirror of what you've lived, and there's people out there just waiting to hear what your story is. So yeah, I felt a lot more confident, and just being able to offer that encouragement, inspiration to people was big for me.
Do you think healing is ever finished?
No, yes and no. I lived in both physical and mental abuse. My husband was both physically and mentally abusive, and the second relationship I had was massive mental abuse. And I always say that bruises heal, and but mental abuse stays with you. So it's work. It's gonna be work probably every day just to, I mean, some days are better than other, you know, some days will be easier than others, but you know, healing is always something that you have to kind of train your mind to. I think I'm past the point of being so tender to certain situations, but it's a process. It's almost like a grieving process that you go through. It's, you know, that part of you doesn't exist anymore. You're living a different life now. You're living the life you were supposed to live, but you kind of grieve for that. Not grieve because of how it was, but grieve because you feel bad for that, for her. Talking to my younger self, or looking back at my younger self, she went through a lot, and her kids went through a lot. And so it's forgiving yourself, and you know, it gets easier. It does get easier by time. Time takes away a lot of, you know, of the pain and having to heal every single day from it. But it's a process, but it gets easier.
For sure. And so what does peace look like for you today compared to before?
Peace is being able to sit in silence. Me and Jason sit in silence and it's not uncomfortable. It's great. It's not worrying about, you know, what's going to happen next, what big situation is going to blow up next. It's being able to enjoy the little things in life. My grandson's, being able to go play with him, watch him. The last time I was with him, he those little flowers that you blow on, the dandelion things or whatever that you blow on,
Right.
just watching certain things like that and really being able to take those moments in. I missed out on a lot of moments with my kids when they were little because I was so caught up in chaos and destruction and just living to survive that I missed a lot of those times with them. So it's being able to take those small moments and enjoy them and really take in those small moments. So just simple things. Simple things are the big things now. Yeah.
And what would you say to someone who feels discouraged because they feel like their healing is taking a bit longer than they expected?
I would say be easy on yourself. You're not failing, because healing's hard. It's not easy. You're not failing if you just because it's hard. You're not weak because you're tired. Your body is getting used to living this different life. So you're not weak because you may be tired. And healing takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. It's not something that just happens overnight. It takes work. It takes a lot of inner work. Being able to rest is productive. Believe it or not, take time to rest. Take time to just breathe and relax and rest. And remember that when you feel discouraged, starting over is brave. You're brave for starting over. That took a lot of strength. I know for me, it took so much strength just to get to that point that I need to start over. And it's scary and it's hard and it's all of these emotions all in one, but you're brave for starting over.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being here today and for talking about your healing journey and the process.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you to our audience for tuning in. If you're listening right now and healing feels slow, just because your healing is quiet doesn't mean that it isn't happening. So some of the deepest healing happens in private. And in the moment, nobody applauds or nobody posts about. Or nobody sees, but those are the moments that matter the most because they are literally changing you. So, again, Candy, this conversation was so powerful. And so, thank you so much for your vulnerability and for showing up today and sharing more of your story and being so emotional and just open about it. Yeah, you've definitely proved that you don't become a completely different person overnight. So, it's a way of slowly finding your way back to yourself. And to our audience, if this episode resonated with you, you can find Never Far Too Gone, which is Candy's book, in the show notes. And if you feel like this episode may benefit someone that you know, please send it to them. Remember, healing doesn't have to look perfect to be real. Thanks for tuning in, everyone.